This is New England Public Radio News. Every morning, 1,100 students, mostly wearing maroon polos and tan slacks, funnel through the front doors of the High School of Commerce in Springfield. But about 60 students in a different uniform use a separate entrance at the school. Reporter Rachel Kramer from our partners at WGBH and the Ground Truth Project brings us the story of the new school inside Springfield's lowest performing high school and what it means for the students there.
On an early Monday morning, a stream of sleepy teenagers pass under a decorative Gothic arch to enter the High School of Commerce. A security guard and three administrators ask the students to show their IDs.
Hoodies and jackets in your lockers, please. Ear buds away, please. Thank you.
The whole process takes about 45 minutes. At the back of the building by the dumpster, there's a much shorter line leading into the Springfield Honors Academy. The Academy students are easily recognizable by their white button-down shirts and ties. In less than 10 minutes, they pass through a metal detector guarded by two smiling administrators. The Academy launched this fall with 62 freshmen selected from the top-performing 8th graders across the district. Commerce High, on the other hand, is just one step away from a state takeover, despite improvements in its test scores. The students at the two schools are generally not allowed in each other's territories. Some Commerce students feel like this school within a school creates a rift. Eric Perez and Kaisheli Almeida are juniors.
We don't, ever see them because they have their own hallway, so we never run into them and stuff.
They even have their own door. Like, when you come through the back, they have their own sign and everything.
Still, they say it's not really a big deal. Sul Mori Huertes, who's a freshman at the academy, says it's difficult having two schools in one building.
I can hear a lot of people talking about our school and how we're treated differently, but at the end of the day, we earned this. I know I worked hard to get here, and no one's words will get in the way of that.
There's always the danger of that perception that, oh, this is an elitist group that's taken up residence at Commerce.
Grace Howard Donlin, the academy's principal.
I think we really want to push back on that mentality and to say that at the end of the day, all of our students are equally capable of what is meant for them, and it's up to us to sort of pull that capability out of them as individuals.
She says the separation is not meant to create a sense of inferiority in the Commerce students. The Academy's goal is to fill a gap in Springfield public schools.
Our intent here is to just give a little bit more attention to a certain group of students who have been proving themselves all along that they want this type of learning environment that's, extra rigorous and pointing directly towards college.
The way students are selected for the Academy is a form of tracking. Basically, it's creating a separate educational path for high-achieving students.
Sometimes it's a logical and thoughtful approach. Sometimes it has a segregating impact.
That's Paul Revel, a professor at the Harvard Graduate School of Education and the former Secretary of Education for Massachusetts. But he points out tracking isn't just an issue for schools like the Springfield Honors Academy and Commerce. This can happen in a traditional public high school where high-achieving students only take honors or AP courses.
The research on tracking has shown that it's quite negative, particularly for low-performing students, and that has a deleterious effect on the system overall, but probably a beneficial on those students lucky enough to be selected.
Commerce Principal Diane Bauer says it's not that her students aren't smart. The problem is a lot of them are dealing with trauma or problems at home. And 85% are classified as high-need students, meaning they're either low-income, English language learners, or have learning disabilities. Both the Academy and Commerce are very different schools under one roof, but they have something in common. They're both part of Springfield's Empowerment Zone. The Empowerment Zone is actually a public-private partnership that gives principals and teachers more control over curriculum, schedules, staff, and budgets. With this new independence, Bauer says Commerce hopes to roll out a career development program for next fall.
We've done surveys and focus groups with the kids here. What is it that they want? What are they looking for in a career or college? And then come together and look at a goal and a vision for High School of Commerce.
They also have a teacher-led team that's looking into solutions specific to their school's needs, like transportation. For Academy Principal Grace Howard Donlin, that autonomy allowed her to choose which teachers to hire and add a leadership class, and even a no profanity rule without a district-wide approval process. It also let her create a system to keep grades high.
I feel like we have some safety nets in place that are going to keep students from falling through any cracks. Any student drops below a 75 in a class, it's mandatory tutoring until they pull the grade up above a 75. So we're going to do all that we can to keep GPAs heading in the direction for four-year college success.
There is no public data showing whether the Empowerment Zone experiment in Springfield is working, but that hasn't stopped the idea from catching on. Governor Charlie Baker wants empowerment zones for underperforming schools across Massachusetts. And this month, the legislature's Education Committee heard testimony on two related bills. Teachers' union officials initially signed off on the Springfield Empowerment Zone, but they're skeptical of efforts to expand it statewide. They say the bills jeopardize local control and undermine teachers' collective bargaining rights. So, like anything involving schools, there's a divide on whether this is the right way to go. For New England Public Radio, I'm Rachel Kramer.
This story came to us from Crossing the Divide, a cross-country reporting road trip from WGBH and the Ground Truth Project. Rachel is on a team of five reporters exploring issues that divide us and stories that unite us. Follow their trip across America at xthedivide.org.